This is Cheryl McQuaid with Lansing Fisher Body Historical Team. It is December 12th, 2005, at approximately 10:15. We are preparing to interview Vic Voisinet. We're at the 602 UAW Union Hall in the conference room. First, we're going to go around and acknowledge everybody else in the room.
Mike Fleming.
Marilyn Coulter.
Jerry Smith.
John Fidoa.
And Vic Voisinet. Could you state your name and spell your last name for us, please?
My name is Vic Voisinet, and I spell my last name V-O-I-S-I-N-E-T.
And what is your address, Vic?
I live in 9265 Tallman Road, Eagle, Michigan.
And are you married? Do you have children?
Yes, I've been married for 37 years. We have 5 children.
And do you have any military service time?
I was in the National Guard for 6 years, from January of 63 till January of 69.
And what is your educational background?
I went to school to 12 years, graduated from Resurrection High School in Lansing.
And could you tell me, do you remember your hire-in date and the first day that you walked into Fisher Body?
Well, I think that's something everybody kind of remembers. It was March 11th, 1964, and I think everybody kind of had the same experience. You're amazed by the size of it from the time you walk to the office where they expect you to work, and you're kind of amazed by the noise and the... You feel like kind of an animal in a zoo or something. It's a little scary.
How old were you when you hired in?
I was 20 years old.
And why did you seek employment at Fisher Body?
Well, I think for a reason everybody does. You know, it paid a lot more money than any place else. And my first aim in life and only aim at that time was to buy a new car.
And did you buy a new car?
Oh, yeah, about 2 months after I hired in, I bought a 1964 Chevy Supersport.
Michael Fleming.
'64 Supersport. Through the times that you work at GM up until the time you retired, have you always had GM vehicles?
The only exception, 1967, I bought a Jeep.
Did you?
Yeah.
So what are some of the types of vehicles that you've had from General Motors?
Well, I think I go right down the list. I bought a 64 Supersport. Then I bought a 66 Impala. Then I bought a 69 Chevelle.
Oh, that was a good one.
That was a good one. Then a 73 Cutlass. And then I bought a, well, I had the Cutlass, I also bought a 74 Chevy pickup. Then I bought a 78 pickup. And my next car, I think, wasn't. The 73 Cutlass was an extremely good car. I kept it till 1983 when I bought a Delta 88. And then our family was getting rather large, so we bought a 87 Astro minivan. And there was a 78 pickup threw in there someplace. And after the Astro van, we bought a full-size Chevy van in 91. And then let me take the next one. After the Chevy van was a Buick LeSabre. And then we bought the vehicle we have now, a 2003 Envoy.
That's a very good testament to...
Oh, plus I almost forget, we bought a 99 Cadillac DeVille, which we still have, too.
That's a very good testament to GM loyalty. When you hired in, which department did you come into? Where did you begin to work?
I hired in on the day shift, worked in the trim department, what was a 3X building, for a gentleman named Russell Birch. They used to call him the Little General. And I worked in the back end of Vista Cruisers, putting moldings on the inside around the windows. There were 3-4 windows in the roof. Okay. And the main problem on that job, back then you used electrical drills and electrical driver motors. If you pushed too hard, you could actually drill a hole right through the roof of the car, which they really frown on.
Cheryl McQuaid, Vic, what shift did you hire in on?
I hired first shift, and I worked first shift for almost 2 years. Then I got bumped to nights for about a month, then I came right back to days. That's all the nights I ever worked.
And what other jobs did you do? Can you walk us right through those like you can your cars?
I spent a long time. I went on utility after that. I basically did every job in the trim shop and what they called hardware at that time. I installed carpets, put in windshields, body side moldings, rocker moldings, headliners.
Marilyn Coulter.
Vic, could you please tell us what is utility, please?
Oh, good question. Utility replaces people that are on vacation or sick leave or just absent for the day for whatever reason. You know, you expect to be able to cover their job, you know, after like 3 minutes of break-in time. You
know. Yours, ma'am.
Also, what do you mean by hardware line?
Well, the trim shop used to be divided. It was called soft trim and hard trim. It was actually the same line where they came out of paint and went through hardware first, what they referred to as hardware, where you did what they considered the hard trim, you know, body side moldings, rocker moldings, interior wiring, windshields. And then it went up to kept running going in the same line, but they did the soft trim then, you know, headliners, seats, carpets, and stuff of that nature.
Mike Fleming. Vic, you spoke of you went to nights for how long?
Just a couple months was all.
And then you came back to days for the duration of your time.
Yeah.
That's kind of unusual. Could you talk about that a little bit?
Well, I think the whole reason was in 62 or 63, they added the 3X building on, which doubled the size of Fisherbody. So when I hired in at 64, your seniority was good right away. You know, count in fact they had doubled the size of the plant.
Yeah, because we, you know, most of us realize there's a time once you get put on nights, you'll be there for some time.
Oh yeah, I love
until you return.
Yeah,
that was very good. Another question I want to ask you before we move on was your last name is Voisinet. What is that? It sounds French. Is that French? Or?
Well, the name itself is French, but I'm about 95% Irish.
Okay.
It goes back to a great-great-grandfather was French.
Sure.
Everybody after that's been Irish, though.
Mm-hmm. Now, here's the question. Do you have any relatives that work for Fisherbody or any General Motors operation besides yourself?
Well, I had several cousins, and I had one brother that retired and a brother-in-law that both worked here in Lansing.
Marilyn Coulter. Vic, I just want to digress a little bit. Now, you said that you were a resident of Lansing?
I was born in Lansing.
In Lansing?
And I went to school in Lansing. I lived in DeWitt till I was 20.
Okay.
But we went to Catholic school, which was in Lansing. Yeah.
In Lansing. So did you know, as growing up, did you know anything about Fisherbody before you came in here?
Absolutely nothing, you know, because I went to school on north side and the east side. I never knew the building was here until a month before I hired in, probably.
Okay. When you did hire in, were there any types of, even though you came into a new building, was there any types of new hire initiations, any kind of pranks that were pulled on you when you first hired in?
Actually, they didn't do too many of them then because there were so many new hires, I don't think there was time, you know. You know, the day I come in, there were like 12, 15 of us came. You know, and I was the only one that actually stayed beyond a couple of weeks. But every morning they would bring 10, 12 new people up. You know.
Marilyn Coulter, you said something. You said you were one of the few that stayed beyond a couple of weeks. Can you tell us what it was like to come in here? And what type of work it was, and why was the people were so able to leave a job so easily back then?
Well, things were different. Like myself, I had put applications in at you know, Fisher Body and Olds and Rio and Motor Wheel. And they all called me in a matter of 2-3 days for interviews. But Fisher happened to call first, so I came here first. No.
So it was true back then. If you didn't like work one plant, you just went to another.
Yeah, you just went to another. You know.
Jobs
and, several guys came in and worked here a week or 2 weeks and didn't like them. They'd leave and they'd go someplace else, and 6 months later they'd come back. You know, it was an option we had that, you know, definitely don't exist anymore. You know.
Cheryl McQuaid, Vic, you said you did a lot of jobs. Can you tell us what's the worst job you did in that plant?
The worst job, without a doubt, was when I first hired in. And for several years, they did it to put the rear speakers in cars. You had to lay on your back in the trunk. There was nothing in there to lay on other than the sheet metal. You know, you had to lay in there and you had to use a hand ratchet thing to put two nuts on each speaker to hold them in place. You know, it hurt the back of your head, it hurt the back of your legs, and it hurt your back. And you were laying flat on your back, and you had to stand up from that position. You know, something I definitely couldn't do anymore at my age.
So, since working there, when you first hired into present day, or before the plant closed, what were some of the major differences in the way the plant operated?
Well, everything is totally different from the way a department is managed. Back then, the supervisor was his business. From where the first car came in his department, you know, till it left, he totally controlled absolutely everything. You know, there was no such thing as time study or somebody else telling him how to delegate work or anything. And if he didn't like you, he just got rid of you, you know, shipped you to another department or whatever. And it was absolutely nothing, you know, anybody could do or say about it. It was the boss in that department, he was the boss in that department, period. You know, which had good points and bad points, because you definitely knew where you stood. You know.
Mike Fleming. Vic, were you ever involved in any layoffs or strikes during your time with Fisher Body?
The only layoffs I ever was involved in, kind of when I hired in, was just when the whole plant was off for major changeovers. Or in, I think, 73 and 74, we had slowdowns, kind of car sales. But it was always the whole plant. I was never individually laid off.
How about a strike that you can remember?
I was involved in two strikes. One was in 1964, the first year I was here. And we were out about 6 weeks that time. I think it's when we got full coverage on our health care, I believe, memory serves the right.
30 and out, maybe. Was it 30 and out?
No, 30 and out, I don't believe, came till 1970 when we were on strike again. Okay. For about the same length of time, about 6-7 weeks. Yeah, and that's one I'm sure that was 30 and out.
How did it affect you back then to be on strike? Did you receive strike pay or anything?
Yeah, as my memory serves you right, we received like 30 a week if you were single. Then by 1970, I was married, so we got $35 a week. You know. But $35 was worth a whole lot more now than it was.
6 weeks is quite a bit of time to be off. Did you do anything to supplement that back then, or you just had to write it out?
Well, actually, in 64, I know I worked here like 6 months, and I was thinking seriously of going to work full-time for the National Guard. So during that downtime, or the strike time, I spent quite a bit of time working there. Then by 1970, I was married, and we built a new house, and we moved in like 1st September, and the strike was 14th September. So it gave me, my wife was working full-time, we didn't have any kids. So it gave me a lot of time to plant the grass and paint the house and stay in the house. So it was time well spent, I guess.
Oh, very good. You know. Vic, now, you talked about the different departments you went into and your utility. Where did you end up and as you are now from that time, talk about that, if you
Well, for about the last 20 years, I've been a material. And for the last 16 years, I've held the same job in material controller and trim shop. In the material department, I always liked a lot better because it got you away from the line. I think you may have worked just many hours a day, but you had a little more freedom to make phone call or go to the bathroom or whatever, you know. And for some reason, I don't know it's because I had more seniority time I got to material. The supervisors always treated me a lot better. They acted like I might know something, which a feeling you didn't get a whole lot working on the line. They assumed you didn't know anything. So I think material to that, you know, extent was a lot better. The, you know, you had to do more thinking of things. Plus the fact that your, you know, superiors, you know, gave you credit for whatever reason for having some knowledge, you know. It definitely made the days go way, way faster.
I can attest to that. I know it's more responsibility. It's a very responsible position to make sure stock gets to where it needs to be in time. When you want to talk about the times that you when you first came in and how bulk stock was taken care of, and then it went to just-in-time delivery, the different concepts.
Yeah, that was a huge benefit to everybody. It was a huge money saver for GM, plus the fact that we didn't run out of stock near as often, because we used to have sometimes, I think, up to a year's worth of stock, but we had just these huge, huge piles. Regulators, I remember, especially we had them, these come in a 51-31 basket. And those baskets were approximately 4 feet square. And we might have them stacked 10 high, but there was no actually designated spot. You might have a stack of 100, 200, you know, 51-31 baskets, and nobody really knew what was in it. They were just placed in randomly, and some of them might be there for a year before they were used. You never really knew how many you had until you went looking for one and couldn't find it.
So it wasn't uncommon to lose stock.
Yes. And once we got to where we're at now, just in time, everything had designated lane, and you could glance and see exactly what you had. You know, and our books were considerably more on than they were, you know, 15 years ago.
You know. You say regulated. Are those door regulators you're talking about, which allowed the doors to open and close with a lock, or what type of regulators?
Well, the regulators I was referring to is like the run the windows up and down in the in the doors of the cars, yes. But material, I think we have probably, you know, 10% of the inventory that we had 20 years ago. But any item, if you want to go out on the floor and count it, we're way, way closer to what our book says we had than we were, you know, 15, 20 years ago.
16 years as a dock controller. How many controllers have you trained?
I don't know. It'd be hard to say. I would say probably 5, 6.
How about hot stock people? And talk about the people that were hot stock people, that concept.
Well, the hot stock job basically got eliminated over the years. 15, 20 years ago, we were chasing hot stock continuously because our system wasn't good enough and we didn't know what we had or where it was. So you could go out and search for a half hour for a box of screws, you know, and find them at the other end of the building, you know, because they came in on pallets with 10 other parts, whereas the last number of years, screws came in just on a pallet. Each pallet had just one part number on it. And it had a designated storage spot, so you always knew where it was. So hot stock became way, way less of an issue the last, you know, 5, 6 years. You know, one guy might not spend an hour a week chasing a hot stock, where 15, 20 years ago, we had 5, 6 guys doing it all day. You know, basically just looking for stuff that was supposed to be there. But nobody, other than to know it was in the building, nobody really knew for sure where it was. You know.
As I can recall, there was a guy out on 15 dock, had a nickname, something Bob, and you have trailers that would be dropped, and then you would have a guy that would go and get trailers. Do you remember anything about that type of situation?
Yeah, Bob the Switcher, they call him, right?
Switcher Bob, that was his name, yes.
It was two different guys. Both of them, first name was Bob.
Yeah.
I don't recall their last names. They didn't work for a GM. They worked for a...
Talk about the switcher and drop trailers and what that meant to your job.
Well, when we had drop trailers, it made the job way more complicated. Because I looked on my computer every morning and had to pick out which trailer I want unloaded when. Because there might be 25 trailers sitting out in the yard. And then you'd give a list to Switcher Bob. Then he'd bring the trailers in order if you thought you needed them. But you looked at the trailer and see what was on it. There might be 40 different parts. And you kind of had to pick the one that had the most parts that you needed first and hoped you guessed good, you know. Whereas time progressed to the just-in-time stock, the office people actually set the trailers up on what they called a milk run, which worked, you know, basically kind of like UPS. These trailers went around to different vendors, picked up parts, took them to a central locating area, and then they were loaded there in the order we needed them. And then they called it a live unload. The trailers just came right straight into Fisher to the dock and were unloaded. So you always got your stock in time, 99.9% of the time. There was no more of looking at your computer screen for an hour in the morning and try to pick out trailers and hope like hell you had them in the right order. You know?
So the stress of stopping the line was kind of taken away from, or that burden was taken away from you a little bit, eased up a little.
Yeah, it eased it up considerably unless you got into a bad stock situation or once in a while parts weren't on a trailer that were supposed to be, and then that kind of raised other problems. But it got considerably smoother as the years went by.
Yeah. Just one more question before I turn it over to someone else. Talk about the your bosses, your manufacturing coordinators, your supervisors, some of the ones that you really, really got along well and enjoyed to work with, and maybe there was a couple that you didn't get along with.
Well, I think one of the better supervisors we ever had was a guy named Max Polson. And Max was good because he liked people to start with. He was extremely good at the material end of it. He never took his job so serious where he would, you know, just holler at people for the sake of thinking that was going to get something done. And Mark had a lot of one-liners, or Max, that he would say. One was when people come up with new ideas, if Max thought it was an idea that probably wouldn't work out, his, you know, Pat, and the answer was, yeah, that should work probably about as good as trying to nail Jell-O on a wall, you know. And he could kind of defuse a real serious meaning with these little remarks, you know. And he had a habit when people talked in meetings, he always carried a little notebook and he'd write down, summarize what they would talk about. And I remember this one guy talking one time on and for like 20 minutes, not saying a whole lot. And Max had me sitting next to me, and the gentleman got done. Max says, can I borrow your pen? Because that guy talked 20 minutes, says, and my pen won't write a thing. But he was a good supervisor. He was a good people person. He always kept a roller decks. And if it was somebody's birthday, he would write that in the roller decks. Or if it was their anniversary, or if they had a kid that was graduating from high school on such a date, he'd write that in the roller decks, and every morning he'd get his roller decks out and look. And if it's somebody's birthday, he'd make a point of wishing them happy birthday, or if their son or daughter was graduating or getting married, he'd congratulate them and so forth. You know, and he was extremely knowledgeable about the material end of it. You know.
Marilyn Coulter?
That was something that the supervisors did when there was somebody's birthday or things like that. Were there things that you people did in the material world itself for your coworkers when there was a birthday or a retirement or anything special?
Actually, material world, we didn't get into it that much because by the time I got into material, you know, we were an older group of men. and anniversaries and birthdays, one now we're not a big event for us, I guess, you know.
What about holidays?
We did have, you know, like potluck dinners for holidays and things like that, or retirements, but, you know, like say we weren't big at celebrating, you know, occasions, you know.
Cheryl McQuaid, Vic, did you ever sell anything in the plant, or did you ever purchase anything from fellow employees in the plant?
I used to purchase little stuff from here and there, but I never sold anything. So I had like 5 kids, and they were always selling something from school. And I just flat out made a decision that I was going to bring it into the shop, because I'd be selling something every day pretty much, you know, for band or softball or football or basketball or, you know.
So what were some of the types of things that you did purchase?
Well, somebody was always selling some kind of candy, which was real hard to pass up, you know. I think that's pretty much all I ever bought, though, was candy of different types. So.
Mike Fleming. Vic, I want you to talk about how this safety within the material department evolved. Even though you weren't driving a truck, I'm sure you're aware of it. We had, at one point, GM created what was called Bring Your Child to Work Day. Yeah. What was that day like than any other day? Because we had so many people in the plant. As far as safety and a material person driving a truck. Can you talk about that?
Well, bringing your child to work day, we always thought it was kind of a nice thing, but we always didn't really look forward to it because you had to really be aware of what was going on. And they usually tried to get a couple extra drivers on the floor, you know, because the younger kids or adults were guilty of it too, that weren't used to the, you know, factory, you know, lifestyle of just walking here and there, you know, thinking that the fork truck drivers were, you know, had all day to get where they're going, not realizing that they had to deliver X amount of stock, you know, in a certain amount of time, you know. But it was probably good because it kind of, you know, we'd go over a lot of safety rules leading up to it, which never hurt anybody to, you know, revisit those time to time, you know. So it was probably a good thing overall, you know. It was always fun to see the people in there gawking and, you know, being amazed at what we were doing. The things that we took for granted, you know.
Cheryl McQuaid. Vic, do you remember any of the weather constraints that were put upon material?
Well, in the last few years, it got to be more of a problem because when trucks came into the dock, they basically had to be unloaded. Well, especially like the IEP pads and stuff had to be unloaded, you know, in a very timely manner. You had about a 20-minute window. And when the weather was bad, the trucks would get here late. And they sometimes was a problem with them backing up the dock out of the ice. You know, we come several times within a matter of 2-3 minutes of shutting the line down, you know. There'd be guys out there shoveling and throwing salt in their trucks. And a couple times we had a wrecker push trucks up to the dock because they couldn't get traction. And It made it a more interesting day when you get a good ice storm or good heavy snowstorm, you know. You kind of regretted it happened, but it broke up the rut of the daily, everything clicking according to plan.
So what about trucks that were maybe coming from further away than just the IP plant, from Ohio, or was there any problems with that, or...
That usually didn't happen that often, I mean, because they're all obviously traveled interstate, you know. I don't think there was 2-3 times in all the years that I was in material that we had a problem with, you know, storms, you know, say in Ohio or Pennsylvania or New York, you know. A couple times it got us a little bit of a bind, but I don't believe we ever shut the plant down, you know, due to those problems, you know.
Marilyn Coulter.
Vic. Can you tell us what types of things you did, like during your lunch hour? Did you develop any friendships that went outside the plant? Can you tell us anything about those?
Well, as far as my lunch hour, the last 5-6 years, I basically took a nap. But previous years, you know, we did all sorts of things. You know, I played cards for several years. A lot of euchre was played. You know, some poker. you know. As far as developing friendships outside of the plant, I don't think I did a whole lot of, well, I didn't do a whole lot of that. I think mainly because I'm from a rather large family, so is my wife. And we live in a small town, West Philly, Michigan, which we do a lot of, you know, social activities with neighbors and the church and so forth. So it gets basic, and having five kids too occupies your time quite a bit. So it's more of a time restraint. Not that I didn't, you know, like the people I worked with. I worked with a lot of super nice people over the years. So.
They had, I know, like you mentioned church, so I know that they had Bible study groups and things like that in the plant. Did you participate in any of those groups?
No, I never actually got involved in any of those, no.
Cheryl McQuaid, you, it was known that GM Fisher Body was number one in capital equality. What do you think is the reason for that?
Well, I think it's due to our workforce, you know. So I think anybody that ever worked there will tell you 99% of the people that worked there were very, you know, aware of quality and wanted to do a good job, you know. So I think this comes right down to the people were, you know, very, very good people, you know. 99.9% of, you know.
Vic.
Marilyn Coulter.
you've worked here for a lot of years, and the plant has gone through a lot of different changes. We had name changes, and we also had policy changes. Can you tell us how you felt about those things that happened?
Well, the name changes, I always had a theory that it was kind of a smoke and mirror deal, is where GM was getting in trouble, you know, financially somewhat. They were doing all these changes that they thought was accomplishing something, which I, you know, it's probably, you know, a narrow point of view, but I thought it was just kind of a waste of time and money, you know. You know, because we were always the same building. We were basically building the same product over the years. And our whole purpose was to build a car at a profit. And I don't think it mattered if we were called Fisher Body or BOC or a Lansing Car Assembly. I thought it was kind of management's part, a waste of money, changing our letterheads all the time and changing the name on the building when we were the same, you know, building, like, say, building cars, trying to build cars for a profit, you know. I think they should have concentrated more on, you know, getting us a better product and selling the product and getting market share than, you know, saying, well, we're BOC and now we're part of Lansing Car Assembly. And I'm not sure who we actually are by the time we close. You know, we change so often, you know.
Cheryl McQuaid, Vic, you mentioned that you thought it was maybe management's way of wasting money, and that made me think about you being in the material world. Did you ever see management, or did you ever see a big waste of money that you just thought, whoa?
Well, there's about 5 years ago, we built a bunch of docks on the building, 4 years ago, whenever it was. We were told we were well in excess of a few million dollars. And I think if they'd been a little better planning, if they knew the building was going to close, you know, in the amount of time, seems like that was a total waste of money. Same as like building the instrument panels. We moved to Bin Plant about 10 years ago at a huge expense, built lines to build them on. We did it for 2-3 years, and then we decided it was cheaper to build them off-site. And they built Delphi built a building off-site to build them. Then we trucked them in for 3-4 years. Then all of a sudden, you know, then we built these millions of dollars of docks. Then all of a sudden we're out of business. It's like, gee, guys, maybe we need like a 5-year plan and a 10-year plan and a 15-year plan rather than a 6-month plan. You know, I think people meant well, but it's like Group A is not talking to Group B and Group B is not talking to Group C. We need to get together and, you know, look down the road, you know, 5 years, 10 years, where we want to be. You know.
Mike Fleming, certainly that's, they were all short-term fixes. They had no milestone plans in place. Let's talk about changeover. And, you know, you worked here, and I know that in material and some of the groups and like environmental services and trades, there's an awful lot of money to be made. What is, in your opinion, the most amount of money you made in 1 year? Was it attributable to changeover, overtime, or whatever? Talk about the overtime and changeover and the amount of money you made per year.
You said I'll follow how much money I made personally.
What's the most that you think you made in 1 year here, over and above what your regular salary would have been? And was it attributable to changeover? Was it attributable to the overtime throughout the year?
Well, in the material world, we got a lot of overtime beyond the line, you know. And actually, it was a smart business move to do it because it was cheaper to pay, say, 10 of us people to come in and count stock, inventory stock, make sure we were on, you know, book and everything, as opposed to have the line come in Monday morning and send 3,000 people home at 10 o'clock in the morning because you're out of parts, you know. And when we had major changes over, yes, we made, you know, a lot of money because we'd work 10, 11 hours a day through, you know, in 91 or somewhere there, we had a large changeover. That I was when they brought the IP line and I worked straight through. You know, we'd work a lot of, you know, 10, 11 hour days. You know, you'd make big money. I mean, it was good money, but it was, you know, you definitely worked for it, you know. But it was interesting work, so, you know, you didn't mind doing it, you know. Because the biggest problem I see in a car assembly plant is trying to eliminate the boredom of the poor people working on the line, you know. Because once you can get offline, it's really a good place to work, you know.
What was, do you have a dollar amount that you think that you made more in 1 year than you did any other year?
I couldn't really tell you the year, but I made like $70,000 a couple of years, you know. I'm not sure what year is, maybe. It'd be just a wild guess. I'm not even going to guess. Yeah.
Oh, Cheryl McQuaid. But that $70,000 came at a cost.
Oh, yeah, it came at a cost. A lot of overtime hours, a lot of Saturdays, you know, a few Sundays here and there, you know.
If I was to ask your wife or your children, what would you think that their answer might be to that?
Well, having been married 37 years, I wouldn't even guess what my wife's answer might be. It'd be just a guess, and I know I'd be wrong.
Did you miss out on a lot of school activities for the kids?
Well, you definitely miss out on some, but my wife didn't work when our kids were all, you know, young and at home, so, you know. You felt like, you know, marriage is, you know, wife and I are one person. So, you know, between the two of us, we got pretty much to everything. Yeah. Yeah.
Marilyn Coulter.
Vic, did you ever participate in any of your union meetings or your union functions?
Not a whole lot. I went to maybe 20 union meetings in 30-plus years, you know. I went to quite a few of their picnics since they've been held in Eagle the last 10 years or whatever, but, you know, they're always very, you know, enjoyable, you know.
But did you participate, did you vote in your union elections?
Oh, yes, I don't think I ever missed voting in any election, to my knowledge, you know.
What would you say would be your most appreciated bargained benefit that the union got for you?
See, that's kind of a big question. Because when I first hired in, we paid like half of our Blue Cross. We didn't have subpay. We didn't have, you know, 13 out. We didn't have tuition assistance for, you know, your children or yourself, you know. So it'd be hard to nail it down to one. Right now, as I'm facing retirement, I say the pension's the best part, you know. But you couldn't retire without the health care. You know, coverage, you know.
So the union's given you a lot of things.
Oh, yes, an enormous amount. Now, I've got five kids that all went through college, and the union, you know, paid, I think, $750 on the older ones and $1,500 on my son that's a senior in college now. So I collect a lot of money from, you know, GM there that would not have happened without the union. You know, if it was still for the union's sake, I hired in at like $2.68 an hour. We'd probably be up to $2.69 an hour now, I think.
Yeah. So in 1964, it was $2.68. And then in 2005, what is it now?
Yeah, I'm not real sure. I think it's like $28 an hour. I think $28 few odd cents.
So it's been very good.
Yes, very good.
Is there anything, Vic, that we haven't asked you that you'd like to tell us about?
Not that I want to record it, no.
Well, I want to ask you, Mike Fleming, I want to ask you one thing. You did mention your wife and yourself. You're involved in church and community activities. What type of activities are you involved in your community?
Well, if you live in West Philly, you get involved in everything. Yeah. Yeah, they have dinners at church. We get involved in. We were on the education committee for many years at the church. And when you live in West Philly, it's a small town. There's only about 1,000 people there. It's almost like that's your life. You know, sure. It's some place you almost have to live to understand it. You know. And I thoroughly enjoy it. We've lived there for 35 years now.
Marilyn Colter, Michael. I'm looking to Michael. But anyways, Marilyn Colter, how far is West Philly from the plant?
Well, from where I live, it's 19 and a half miles, to be exact. Yeah. And West Philly is another 5 miles north and west, yeah. Okay.
Vic, we really appreciate you taking time out of your day to come talk to us. Thank you so much.
Yes, Vic, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. It's been very interesting.